Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 25 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week today is Richard Kirkham, the shepherd of the Lambcast and of the blog Kirkham, A Movie a Day. Welcome back for one final stint this season, Richard. For now. Who knows? Maybe you'll be back.
Glad for one more trip on the IRT.
There you go. Excellent. So minute 25 begins with Garber continuing to be the best teacher around and ends with Blue finally breaking down and calling the tower. So we ended things yesterday with Garber explaining to us and to and to these
directors of the Tokyo subway system.
That's right. These four businessmen from the Tokyo subway system, an explanation as to what Pelham 123 really means. You know, it's the idea that when a train leaves a station, so they use the name of the station and the exact minute that it leaves. And he got cut off mid sentence. And today he begins by saying, well, you know, on the return trip, let's say Flatbush 825. And he looks at them and goes, I hope you're memorizing all this junk. I'm going to ask questions later. Have you ever heard of the area known as Flatbush?
There was a movie called The Lloyds of Flatbush. I assume it's a neighborhood in Brooklyn?
Yes. It's, yeah. Yes. The neighborhood in Brooklyn. The Brooklyn College is located in that in Flatbush. It goes all the way back to the colonial period. Western part of Long Island was inhabited by the Indian tribe known as the Canarsie tribe, and they had a settlement that they created around this area called Flatbush Avenue near King's Highway. Henry Hudson apparently landed in this area in 1609. He was part of the Dutch East India Company, and looking for some interesting stuff to be going on around that area. And they started a settlement there, and they end up building a church in 1654. And they had a big wall that they used to protect themselves from the local Indians at the time, and they even have records nowadays of the schoolhouse from that area. So I mean, there's a lot of stuff that that was going on back in the mid 1600s in that area, and it just continued growing and growing over the years. By the Great Depression, they had the Flatbush had a population of over 400,000 people, and they had a lot of theaters. So they had like 15 theaters there, and in that time, so 1/3 of the Flatbush residents were Jewish people, and they had a lot of Irish Americans and Italians that came to that area also at the same time, which obviously fits in with what you're talking about with the with the Lords of Flatbush. That was a Sylvester Stallone movie from I can't remember if it was the late 70s or early 80s.
It was mid 70s.
It was before Rocky. That's right.
Yeah.
And so. Makes sense that there were Italians there, and so it's a very well known place that they have there. Ebbets Field was located there, which is one of the most well known landmarks of the area. The last census, There were over 120,000 people that were living there. So the numbers, I guess you could sort of say have gone up, but there was a point where there were 400,000. So I guess
Probably some industrialization there.
yeah, probably. Right. So yeah, and so okay, the movie The Lords of Flatbush came out in 1974. And it was actually set in 1958. The Mario Brothers are supposed to be from Flatbush. Interesting. I did not know that. The novel Sophie's Choice takes place predominantly in the neighborhood of Flatbush, and in the 1964 movie The Incredible Mr. Limpet with Don Knotts. So his wife says to him, "If you paid half as so much attention to me as you those fish, I'd be the happiest wife in Flatbush," which obviously tells us that they were living there at the time.
Were they?
Neil Diamond was born in Flatbush. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was born in Flatbush. Susan Hayward was born in Flatbush. Leona Helmsley was born there. Bernie Sanders was born in Flatbush. Barbra Streisand was born in Flatbush. So yeah, there's a lot of famous people that have come out of So Garber continues, I guess, mocking the people that he's walking around with, these businessmen. He says, "I hope you're memorizing all this junk. I'm going to ask questions later." And one of the guys near him goes, "Garber, what the hell's the matter with you?" He goes, "Ah, don't worry about it. They don't understand a word of English. This way, dummies. Just step this way, dummies. Over here." And then he points to Frank, who's sitting there. So again, as I mentioned yesterday, it's nice to have this connection where we actually see where Frank is sitting and how Garber is connected to the whole thing. And he goes, "Over here, Train Master Frank Carell, the Lord Byron of the New York City subway system." And we see Frank still trying to raise Palom on the radio, and he goes, "Come in, Palom 123." And then Garber says, "Observe the way fire and smoke shoot out of his ears." And Coral says, "Don't bug me, Garber. I got trouble here." He goes, "Hey, what's the matter?" He goes, "Oh, nothing. A train is down. Its radio is dead. The power's off. And it's dumped its load. Aside from that, everything is ginger peachy." I gotta say, I've never heard the term ginger peachy before. Have you ever heard that before? You've heard the term ginger peachy, or just that something is peachy? Really?
Ginger peachy.
Okay.
It was probably a soda flavor.
Is that, do you think so?
That would be my guess. But it was, it's a reference to everything being great. It's obviously being used sarcastically here or ironically here. But Ginger Peachy, yeah, I've heard that combination of phrases. I've heard that.
Okay.
Or else I'm having a weird Mandela effect.
No, you're right. It combines the slang meaning of ginger, which means vigor or vitality, with peachy keen, which is a phrase indicating something is excellent. But when you pair the two together, it suggests more of a mocking tone and sarcasm.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've never heard that phrase before. Beyond this movie, where he says things are ginger peachy. I've heard things are peachy. And then we do get to see the hustle and bustle of everything going on in this command center, which I like.
Yeah, there are a dozen desks in the area, and everybody's got some operating equipment that they're working on, and all of the stations are manned, so there's a lot of activity happening in the central area here.
That's right. And like one of the guys that Garber passes has on his desk a pretty big bottle that says on it Red Cross table salt, which I have no idea why someone would have that in their office because it's huge. If we saw, back at Kaz's desk that he got the salt and pepper, that sort of makes sense. There's little pepper shakers, stuff like that. But, now this is very interesting for what's about to happen. But if you look to the left-hand side of the screen at around 14 seconds, you can actually see what time it is. Because
Oh yeah, two ten,
that's
pretty
right.
close.
Yeah. And the next line, the shot changes and we're back on the train. And Blue says, "What time is it, Mr. Green?" And he looks at his watch and goes, 2:10. And he goes, "Right. Time to talk to them." And I like the continuity that they've figured that out, that Garber is supposed to be there at 2:10. So let's set the clock to that time. So shows a lot of thought went into that in this movie, because most movies wouldn't pay much attention to something like that.
They wouldn't have gotten the clock right, yeah.
Exactly. And then Blue turns to Green and is a little concerned. And he goes, "Something troubling you?" He goes, "I think I'm gonna die today." He goes, "Well, that's entirely possible." And then
Yeah.
Green starts to cough again. Now, do you think that Green is referring to the fact that he's going to die from his cold, or that he's gonna die
Yeah.
from what they're doing?
No, I just think he feels miserable and he feels like he's on the brink of death. I've often felt that way when I've been sick. I may die today.
Yes. Exactly. No, I agree. It's a nice play on words the way that they do
Yeah.
that. And I do love the fact that everything that Blue does is specifically timed. This whole thing is so intricately planned out. It's just great. It
Well,
says
like
so
when you're
much
doing
about the
a
character.
podcast that's a minute by minute of a movie, you got to be precise and accurate. You got to get everything at the right spot because how many guests are you going to have? How long are they going to be on? And who do we kill next? And how much longer until the next person that we kill?
Right. Okay. I don't kill any of my guests. I try not to. I do my best not to kill my guests, because I want them to be able to come back in future seasons. So, it's a pain to have to try
I
and find
didn't mean
new
to
guests
conflate you with
every month.
Mr. Blue too much.
No, that's okay. Mr. Blue is a great character, so I don't have a problem from that perspective of being connected to him. That he deals with guns and I deal with podcasts, so that's okay. You weren't saying that I was going to shoot people, so that's okay.
No, that was not my implant. That was
Exactly.
not
So
my intent.
therefore everything is fine. And then Blue picks up the radio and starts talking. He goes, "This is Palom 123." And then he gets cut off. And to find out what he wants to say, people are going to have to come back on Monday to with a new guest to try to hear what he wants to say. Richard, is there anything else you want to say about either this particular minute or about the movie in general that we might have glossed over or not mentioned yet?
Well, I think that the movie is, like I said, I think I said this on Monday, it's full of authentic actors who are playing characters that you could literally imagine being in their roles in New York City in 1973, 74. And they all talk that way as well. The sarcastic comments that Garber is making to the directors of the Japanese metro system
Yeah,
is
which
very familiar to,
you're gonna get worse.
well, it's very familiar to the kinds of things that tour guides do. Keep track because I'm going to ask questions later. That sounds like a very typical joke that a tour guide would make. And of course, he's making it even more facetiously because he's operating under the false belief that they don't understand him. The film is just, it moves really well. It's paced very well. All these sequences with the characters intercut with one another. I think it's very effective. It gets better from here.
mean, this is a movie that the plot just keeps building and building, which is done. I mean, this is written really well, and you know it allows us to see things as it moves along,
yeah,
and it's paced really, really well from that perspective. So, all right, excellent. So every Friday we have a segment called Fun City Friday, where my guests will give their top five movies that are somehow centered around New York. So, Richard, once again, will you start with your number five and work your way up?
All right. Well, I tried to pick films from different eras in New York, and also films that reflected, you know, different images of the city as well. I'm going to start with the most positive one at number five, which is You've Got Mail, the rom-com with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, because it gives us the view of New York that most of us would love to have as if we were a resident, and the one that we all have as tourists. This is the New York that we want to visit, a bustling place that's full of people who are interesting, small little bookstores and coffee shops around the corner, and giant retail outlets. And you've got an interesting neighborhood to walk through, and there are parks to enjoy, and it's a visitor's dream of what New York is like. So that's why I picked You've Got Mail for that spot. Let's contrast that. By the way, the picture that we've been talking about would have been a good illustration of the gritty New York of the 1970s, but I picked a different film that's even grimmer, and that's Death Wish, because I'm a Charles Bronson fan, and riding the subway there is also pretty deadly, but mostly if you are running into Charles Bronson while he's reading his newspaper. So, and you can see the way the city is decayed a little bit. Number three is kind of a romanticized view of New York, but also it does contain some of the gritty and negative elements, and that's West Side Story, the first one, not the Spielberg version, but the Robert Wise version. Excuse me. You know, the idea of gangs performing ballet moves in the streets is a little artistic, but the streets are full of grit and, you know, the small, what would now be referred to as a bodega that they hang out in and visit a couple of times. That really feels very much like New York. In the number two spot, I have a fantasy version of New York that I love, Guys and Dolls, the film with Marlon Brando and Frank Sinatra and Gene Simmons. Not that Gene Simmons, but the actress Gene Simmons. And it's a lot of fun. We mentioned Damon Runyon earlier when you were talking about who's buried in the cemetery there in Woodland. And, you know, the Guys and Dolls is based on Damon Runyon characters. And, you know, the idea of going to the deli and eating a strudel or a cheesecake, them having their craps game in the storefronts or underneath the subways, not the subway system, but the elevated trains. That's all a nice fantasy. And then to me, the most iconic view of New York is the one that I looked for when I was a kid and I first visited New York back in 1964 for the World's Fair. My family took a drive back there, and as soon as we got anywhere close, I was looking for the giant ape on the building. So King Kong is my number one Fun City reference movie, because nothing says New York more iconically than a giant gorilla hanging off the side of the Empire State Building.
Yeah, pretty much. That makes a lot of sense. Excellent. All right. And we will now once again play the daily game of Name That Remake. Let's spin the wheel and see what Richard gets this time. Okay. The original came out in 1956, and was remade in 1996. The child of very wealthy couple gets kidnapped, and when the police and the press...
Okay, we're talking about Ransom, I guess.
Mm-hmm, yes.
All right, the 1956 version had Glenn Ford in it, and the 1996 version had Mel Gibson.
That is correct. That is correct. Excellent. You know that Leslie Nielsen was also in the original.
I vaguely remember that, yes. Playing a serious part, of course.
Yes. Well, he up until 1980, he just played serious parts.
Right.
Yeah. So it makes sense. Excellent. All right. So, Richard, would you like for one final time this season to tell everyone where they can find Richard Kirkham?
You can find Richard Kirkham at Kirkham A Movie A Day at kirkhamclass.blogspot.com. That'll get you to my Blogspot location, which has links to all of my other activities that I'm doing online. You can also just look for kirkhamamovieaday.com. That'll get you to the WordPress site, which has my main content, which is the, you know, if I see a film in a theater, I put a post up on it. And I'm a few movies behind at the moment, but I will eventually catch up, I promise. Also, on a weekly basis, you can find me on the Lamcast, which is the official podcast of the large association of movie blogs, where we get together with four or five other film enthusiasts each week, sometimes fewer, but and occasionally even more. Movie Rob's been a guest on many occasions, and I hope to have him back soon. So
I hope to be back.
But we talk about new movies, we talk about old movies, we talk about... film-related concepts and ideas. Sometimes we have a show where people create their own lists. Sometimes we have draft shows. We just have fun. You know, we like to talk about movies this way, but we also like to have fun while we're talking about the movies, and that's what happens on the Lamcast. And you can find that on all of the pod sources, Stitcher and iPod, iTunes and SoundCloud and all those places that podcasts appear. And we also have a YouTube channel where you get an illustrated version of the podcast. And I've been doing that for almost 3 years now.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Richard, thank you very much for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun for me. I hope. Hope for you too.
It's been my pleasure. I love talking about movies, and I love talking about movies that I love, and this is one of them.
All right. And I forgot to ask you over the course of this week, have you seen either of the remakes of this movie?
I saw the John Travolta Denzel Washington one. I know that there's another one. I think it was a TV movie, so I don't think I ever saw that. And the Denzel Travolta one, I know there are a lot of people who have strong negative reaction to it. I think it's perfectly fine. It attempts to update the concept. It does it a little bit differently. It gives Denzel's character a little bit more story, background, and arc. You know, Travolta is basically eating up the scenery, you know, but I found it to be perfectly entertaining, and I enjoyed it fine.
Okay. All right. Personally, I'm not a fan of it because, again, if you have a movie like this that works so well, why do you even need to try to remake it? But, you know, the people obviously it's mostly done for financial reasons. You know, which
yeah, and to be honest, a lot of people will never see it because it's not a new movie. You know, we forget that the world is full of people who only see things that are in front of them at the moment. They don't look behind them.
Those are crazy people.
I agree. They are nuts. They're missing on some of the best things in the world.
Exactly. All right. So I hope everyone has a great weekend. I'll be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, achoo.
Gesundheit.